ReachMahjong.com's weekly Mahjong podcast in English.
Hello.
Yes, that's the other person that is often, that's always with me, actually. I don't think I've ever done this without you, so I don't know why I would say often. You are, who again?
Jen Barr? Somebody told me that I put a question mark at the end of...
When you say your name, you say...
Yeah, so I thought I would put an extra big question mark at the end of it this time.
Since I was asking.
Yep.
Way to go.
Jen Barr?
And, you know, I suppose my name being from Norway, I should be doing the same thing, since that's everything they say is, like, it's a question. So my name is Gerda. Nelson?
Oh, yeah, it was Nelson. Your... friend that told you it sounded like a girl's name.
My German Gerica? Friend said that?
Yeah.
Huh, I do not remember that.
I was there.
I do remember the Finnish guys laughing at me for me trying to pronounce my name in like sort of Norwegian accent, and they're like, oh wow, you have no idea how to say your name, do you?
Well, they all learn, in Finland, they all learn Swedish.
Yes.
By law.
Yes.
Well, they don't like, they study it by law.
And they all, and like all the Swedes and Finnish and Norwegians make jokes about each other. Like for their stupid people jokes, like instead of blonde jokes, they have Finnish and...
You know how you fight that? When I was a kid, I learned every single blonde joke that there was, and I just brought them out first. Oh, and Santa Claus lives in Finland, too.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And at the post office in Japan now, you can see the Finland Santa Claus Japan Association. That's not the official name, but it's what the name should be.
I will say, one of the guys that was laughing at me is actually, I mean, he could be Santa Claus. Big roly-poly dude with a big old mustache and beard, and he dresses up as Santa Claus every year. Usually, I mean, for Christmas, for Halloween, he's usually a Viking. You found that big old axe blade earlier. Yeah.
I think I don't know, I'm supposed to be Norwegian, too.
Yes, I'm sure we're all supposed to be.
Well, no, I've, like, one of the couples in my family actually came from Norway, and then a couple other stragglers were from Norway as well, in my ancestry. So, yeah, there was a full couple, and they named their daughter Isabel for some reason. So that was my grandma's...
Is your grandma's namesake?
Yeah, my grandma's Isabel. And she was named after whoever that was from Norway.
Who knows how not so incredibly distantly related we might be.
Oh, yeah. I could be one of the three families that your relatives grew up with.
In that little tiny town in Michigan.
And I also have some Irish in me, because pretty much everybody in America has some Irish in them.
Yes, despite the fact that there's fewer people in Ireland than there are in like most Californian cities, I would think. Like LA is definitely bigger than Ireland, isn't it?
I have no idea. So, except for that
Ireland is pretty small.
Ireland's probably way cooler than LA.
Yeah, it's definitely that.
Sorry, LA people. You people are cool. It's just
that place you live is just, it's so annoying. LA. Well, speaking of Mahjong, oh wait, no, we haven't done that yet.
Be a good time to start.
Have you played any Mahjong lately? Because I sure haven't.
I played a couple hours on Thursday for Fight Club.
God, it's annoying. Like, I've actually had a lot of Mahjong work lately, and none of it has me playing Mahjong at all. I'm doing is not playing Mahjong, but talking about it or looking at it. Actually, all right, I did play a little bit on Ronin the other day. But
Yeah, I was playing. We played against each other.
That's right, actually.
You were so bad that I lost. And I wrote it on Twitter, and Mahjong Fight Club Twitter, official Twitter account, retweeted that for us.
That is pretty cool.
Three people retweeted that. That was a popular one.
Really?
I said I was playing with Garth on Ronron. He's so bad. And everybody loved it.
Yes, it's true. Well, a lot of good players are having that problem lately, that the people they play are just so weak they can't beat them.
I know. God, I hope I'm never at the same table with you again, because I can't play against such bad players.
You need to adopt my strategy of playing as badly as possible. then people around you have no idea what you're doing. You get to do whatever you want.
I'm not sure. I think Ronron, they're trying to figure out what the other people are doing. I think on Mahjong Fight Club, they're never, ever trying to figure out what the other people are doing. Because I think they are never folding in that game.
It does depend on which league you are in. I think,
No, I'm always in A and S. They never put me in C League.
Really?
Yep.
Well, I'm in S League. I'm in the Super S, Triple S this month. And they are... I think I'm actually the bottom, at the very bottom of the...
league. Yeah, it's the one time that I wasn't at the very bottom. But the only reason I'm ever at the bottom is because everybody else is so bad.
Yes, that's, I just remembered, that is my problem. Everybody else is so bad, they've pushed me straight to the bottom.
If all the other players on Mahjong Fight Club were good, then I would win all the time.
The weight of their awfulness is just too much for me, I cannot compete.
I hope that we haven't introduced too much sarcasm. Yeah.
Well, speaking
of
somebody
else... If this is your first time listening... Go back and listen to some other ones when we were in a less silly mood.
Yes, we do get serious sometimes. But speaking of somebody else who is mortal too, proving that she is mortal for once, instead of just going and cleaning up the results again like she always does, Gemma did not finish first in the Hanover Reach Mahjong competition in Germany this year.
Man.
So she let somebody else win for once.
Uh-huh.
Being the gracious, like usual, champion she is. And the winner of that tournament was Richard Strickman. There's an umlaut over the O, and I know if I...
Is that the two dots?
Yes, the okay. Two dots, yes.
I call them dots.
Strickman. He finished with a whopping 155,000 points.
Wow.
Which was 50,000 points more than the second place finisher, Michael Zarudnik. Zaradnik. I'm going to go with Zaradnik. Michael Zaradnik finished in second with 102,000, and behind him was Mahjong News' Martin Repp in third place with 57,000.
Wow, way to go in.
So congratulations to those three guys for finishing first, second, and third in a field of 28. It seems like the tournament was a little smaller than it has been in years past. There was a bit of discussion about that, too, how to get players coming from... I guess they said Northern Germany is where most of the Reach players are focused, so how to get more interest from the players in Southern Germany. It's funny, I mean, you know, being from America, you think of a country like Germany, alright, so that's, say, not quite as big as California. Like, it was never that big a deal for me to drive from Santa Barbara up to San Francisco for a tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, well, coming from the U.S., also, when I say I drive to Osaka, it's about a six-hour drive, and people are like, you drive to Osaka? Yeah. That's so far.
It is funny, isn't it, how the distances people think are really far. Just, I don't know, you get a different perspective about what
it's really. Yeah, we would go to my grandparents' apple farm every weekend, and it's like a three-hour drive.
Yeah, you think nothing of a two- or three-hour drive. I mean, that's just going over to see the family. Like, it's around the corner.
Yeah.
You guys down there in southern Germany, get your act together and get up to northern Germany and play with those guys in Hanover.
You know, I drove from Milan up to Hanover, and it was like, it wasn't that long. I mean, we did it in a day. It wasn't bad at all.
Yeah, you'd think, and I mean, actually, you know.
You have the Autobahn.
Besides that, there are players coming from outside of Germany. the other countries represented were Slovakia and Great Britain and the Netherlands. Curiously, I was surprised because given the way the Copenhagen Reach Open was reported, there was so much sort of... there were a couple little jabs towards the Netherlanders for being not the center of Reach Mahjong in Europe. And then there was no representation from the Danish at in Hanover this weekend, at least according to the results I saw. So there was some discussion about how to get more players. It seems that the Mahjong competition rules, even there, are like in their Mahjong pub there where they play in Hanover, the competition rules do get more action than the Reach rules.
I think, Garth, the problem is that you need to step up your game and start writing on the forums.
Oh. Right.
Yeah.
I need to work on that game, too.
I think if you were writing on the forums, there would have been more people in Hanover, so...
Wow. It's directly attributed to me.
Yep.
Holy bagoli. But they did also mention in the article that there's talk of trying to create a world championship in Reach Mahjong. And I do think it's also interesting, given the fact that Reach Mahjong is from Japan, they want to hold it in Europe. Right, it's true. I mean, if you want to start creating interest in Europe, then it's gonna help to have the tournament there. But you're gonna have a really hard time getting most of who are probably the best Reach players in the world. Like, you figure, you know, the Japan Pro Mahjong associations, among them, have got to have a pretty strong pool of talent that you would want to have represented at the World Championship of Reach Mahjong.
Yeah, it's quite a trip and quite an expense to get over there.
Right, and obviously it's going to be the same trip and expense for them to come over here.
Why don't we have it in Vegas?
Oh, that's a fantastic idea. Then we could get the Americans interested, too.
There are cheap deals to Vegas from everywhere.
It's true, everybody wants to go to Vegas. And Vegas wants everybody to go there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a win-win for everyone.
Especially for us.
That's a pretty fantastic idea you just slipped in there. get in touch with those U.S. Professional Mahjong League guys and see if they can get their act together and make something happen in the States, too. But yes, it is exciting to at least have talk of a World Championship of Reach Mahjong. And it would be really cool if you know, enough places could be properly represented so that it would really sort of be a World Championship. And leading right out of that conversation and into the next conversation is something I find interesting about Reach Mahjong in Europe, our strategy talk for this week. The European Reach Mahjong rules tend to have, I'm not sure, what do we say for Kui Nashi in English?
No chow switch?
No chowing.
You can chow.
But for Tanyao.
Oh, okay, okay.
For the simples, for all simples.
Okay. Then, no chow. Yeah. No switch. I thought we were talking about kuikai for some reason.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. I'm not even sure that I have the right word for that in Japanese. Is it called
kuitan nashi.
Kuitan nashi. Okay. Yeah. So kuitan is the rule that we use in Japan. It's also generally referred to as ari-ari, because kuitan is there, and otozuke is allowed. Those are
but
both.
In our competition rules, we allow kuitan. We allow the open tanyao hand.
Right.
But we don't allow, like, the hidden dora or ippatsu,
right,
the first turn win, and things like that.
It's true. So that in the competition rules, that is an exchange that we make that does take away from the luck. And I guess I can see how requiring Tanyao, which we call simples on reachmahjong.com, requiring it to be closed adds some sort of depth to the game. But it really changes the game entirely.
Yeah, it's just such an old rule. Like, the only time I've ever played with that rule is in Europe.
Yeah.
I've never played with it outside of Europe.
I've never played anybody in Japan that wanted to play with that rule either. And I think, if you were to, do you remember, like, how you changed your strategy at all when we were playing in Europe before?
Well, that's probably why I got, like, last place. I wasn't quite last, but...
Yes, that's obviously a large contributor, I'm sure. But I mean, you know, it's...
And probably because you don't write on the forums. And because you're so bad.
And, yes, I am at fault for most things. They are mostly directly traceable back to me in some route. the big thing that I can think of is anytime you have a pair of Dora that are 2 through 8, your instant reaction is to start calling tiles. You know, I mean, you want to win that hand. There's always the possibility that you'll get a third one, in which case you've got Mangan, you've got an 8,000 point hand. As it is, you've already got a 4,000 point hand, and so it is sort of a knee jerk reaction whenever you have, you know, if open simples, open Tanyao is allowed, then, you know, the very first thing you're going to do is start calling tiles as soon as you can. There are also players who just want to win every hand and do that too, which does make it kind of a boring game if everybody plays that way. But for some reason, in Japan, people don't play that way so much, right? Especially in the higher levels, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain why. I don't know. I can't explain for sure why people are against. Why there is, you know, less. Why there is not very much chowing and pointing just because open tanyaos are allowed. But it does go back to what sort of happened in the 10 steps tournament final. A lot of the people watching were wondering why the pro commentators were so so constantly against some of the chowing and poning that was going on.
Mm.
And then some of the other people that were watching too, without the commentators actually addressing it, the other people watching said, well, you know, I mean, pro players tend to keep their hands more concealed. And I don't know. I mean, if you want to play, more higher level mahjong, or if you want to make a big hand, you really have to keep it concealed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the thing about you don't want to show. You want to keep as much of your hand. You don't want to show other players what you've got.
Right.
The more you show other players, the less scary your hand is. Unless you're really calling for things that make your hand expensive, like unless you've pwned. Three dora, then obviously your hand is very expensive. But if you're just, you know, ponchi, and then, you know, you've got like four middle of the road groups that don't even contain one dora, nobody's gonna worry about throwing to your hand. They're gonna be a little annoyed by,
yeah.
by your hand. But I think, you know, it's not like it ruins the game so much. I don't know, just in Japan, we've gotten so used to playing that way. I'm not sure what it adds to the game to have, to require that tanyao is concealed. You have any feelings on that?
Well, I find it really hard to play when it has to be concealed. Well, just because I forget. Didn't you have a chombo because you forgot in Europe?
In Europe? It's quite possible.
I think you did. You had a foul because you forgot that tanyao had to be closed.
I'd totally forgotten that was a possible rule until I chumboed.
No, we definitely mentioned it because Moriyama was there and stuff as well, so we were definitely talking about that. But I've just never played with it, so I don't even ever consider it.
Yeah, it's kind of
exactly.
Hard to really imagine how you react to it, because it's just not something. I mean, since that time we've played in Europe, obviously we've never played with it again. And
well, I know when they were coming up with the RCR, the reach competition rules, and they Ryan Morris and Ben Boaz and I were in part of the emails, like with consulting for it or whatever. And I know I'm pretty sure we all advocated for open Tanya, open Simple's hand. And they just weren't going to go for it, so.
Huh. That's interesting. The game is obviously originally from Japan, and then for it to have grown up in that way there is really interesting. I wonder who has...
Well, it used to be a pretty popular rule, as well as sakizuke.
Uh-huh.
Or not sake.
Atozuke. Like, no atozuke.
No atozuke, and for some reason sakizuke means the same as atozuke, even that should be the opposite, but whatever. Anyway, so that rule was also quite popular, like back way before we ever started playing. And so I think, you know, it was that time that it moved over to Europe, and so they just kept the rules.
Huh.
And well, it changed and evolved here. Yeah, well, it changed and evolved here. It probably stayed more...
Uh-huh.
More to the original, not original, but whatever they were playing at the time that it went over.
Uh-huh.
So the original in Europe.
Okay.
Yeah. Another interesting rule that has been a discussion.
Uh-huh.
In that, did you have a lot more to say about
it? No.
Oh, good. Then I will just move on into my own. It was a discussion on Mahjong News, and I also commented on it, but they were having discussions about possibly introducing a Tobi possibility in tournaments, in RCR tournaments. Tobi is where you bust out, basically.
Right.
You run out of points.
So obviously we don't have that in tournaments in Japan, right?
No, we had it at the Sentenbo tournaments that they were doing on the weekends, but that was just because it was just to speed things up and it was a quick little
Even the B rules in our league, you still can't totally.
Yeah, there's in all professional tournaments, there's no chance at busting out. In most amateur tournaments as well. Like I said, the only time... Because the thing about busting out, so you're starting with 30,000 points. Right. Usually there's a 5,000 point ante. Mm-hmm. So you're starting with 25,000. In tournaments, there's generally no ante like that.
That's a good
point. So you start with 30,000. And that's just basically a bank that you're holding. So it really doesn't have anything... In tournaments, it has nothing to do with your score at all, the 30,000 that you start with.
Right.
It's just, okay, you're going to plus or minus 30,000 at the end of the game. And or subtract 30,000, no matter how many you have, at the end of the game. The reason that Toby rule was created was because to make games go faster in cash games, in parlors, so that the parlor could make more money. It really is not a benefit to the players at all. It's a benefit to the parlor, so they can get more games in per hour, and they can get more rake. That's it. And, I mean, there's a lot of rules like that, like... when they don't allow for the abortive draws.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those are to make the games go faster, because you have to add another continuance and stuff.
Right. Abortive draws, okay.
Abortive.
Abortive draws. Like,
Tochu Ryukoku.
Right. Also, even, like, Renchan Agari and Agari Renchan and Tenpai Renchan.
Yeah, so you continue as dealer whether you're ready or win the hand.
A lot of places don't allow... They require the dealer to win the hand to be able to continue as dealer.
And that's just to make the games go faster. I mean, all of these rules were made just so that you can...
Just so that the Mahjong Parlor could charge for other games a little bit sooner.
Yeah, so, I mean... And, you know, most people, when they're playing private games, they also use the Toby rule, but I think that's more to control losses. Because then you can't lose too much in one game, and you can move on to the next game. It's generally not to benefit the players, which is why they don't use it in tournaments. I mean, it's like a cash control kind of concept.
Huh. So then, what is the argument for using it for adopting it in tournaments?
Well, I think it's the Kasu group from Austria is really wanting this, and those guys are really cool. They've made like lots of tournaments in Austria and stuff like that, and we met them in Hanover as well. They're awesome, but I know a few of them have been to Japan and played, and they're playing in parlors, and they like the excitement about possibly busting out, and so you have to play differently when there's a chance you can bust out, and they like that kind of strategy.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
and obviously it changes the way other players will attack. At that point, too, because if they're thinking they want to win the game, they can't try to win hands that the person that's about to bust out in might actually end up busting out.
Right.
And then it also affects, you know, how big a win a player could possibly get. Like, you know, you just can't have... You couldn't possibly get more than 100,000 points in one game. Whereas, you know, it is theoretically possible that you could get 100,000 points in one game. Or even...
120.
Yes, you could get 120.
Or no, if you start with 30,000.
That's true, yes. But, I mean, even a score like, say, 70 or 80,000 is extremely rare. And most of the time when we get to those points in any of our games, somebody has had to borrow point sticks, right?
So
to be able to pay.
Yeah.
So obviously that would have been somebody that had lost all their points and would have had to, you know, then the game would have been over and you wouldn't have been able to win that many points.
Yeah, and in the Pro Queen tournament, I had to borrow 10,000 points twice.
In one game?
Yeah. and in the first game, a different girl had to borrow 10,000 points twice in one game.
Wow.
It was very...
That's some big scores. Yeah. Well, you did... But alright, in League last month, you probably made... you're going to have to borrow, I mean, not 10,000 points twice, but 20,000 points once.
Well, the thing is, like her and I play so much that we're used to everything, so she didn't even ask. She just gave me 12,000. And
it was obvious.
Well, yeah, I mean, we knew, okay, so we're just borrowing. And she still had about 10,000 points left. She could have paid, like, 22 probably, but I mean, we play so much that maybe she... She felt like she was going to have to pay again. I don't know. But Yeah, so I don't think she might have said I'm borrowing $20,000 or something, but yeah, she just handed me $12,000 basically, and we didn't like. A lot of times when you win a limit hand, people ooh and all over it for at least a few seconds. There was none of that either. We just pushed it in.
Yeah, I think I said before, I was so surprised because I remember hearing 32,000 points, and then I thought there would be a little bit. I felt like looking around, and I'm looking, and it just doesn't seem like you guys are already pushing the tiles in.
Yeah.
No fanfare at all.
Not at all.
Because, we see this kind of thing every day.
Yeah. Because we are badass.
Yes, indeed. Well, that's an interesting discussion, but like you say, for reasons that they don't use Toby here, and I'm not sure how I would like it to be used, if I would like it to be used in tournaments.
Well, if they were going to use it, I would want to do, like, I think the whole system should be changed, like how many games you play and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, because then there's going to be a lot of chances that people won't be dealer and stuff like that. Because right now, one of the big reasons in tournaments to not have that rule, I would think, is so that everybody gets their chance at dealer.
Right.
And I mean, sometimes with time constraints, you don't get there, but...
Right.
That's one big, yeah. big reason.
A lot of things, actually. If somebody is getting that many points anyway, you're probably going to run into the time constraint anyway, because... they're taking up two more hands than you can probably fit in that 50 minutes. So, yeah, I guess you would have to think a little bit harder, like you say, about, like, the whole tournament format in general.
Yeah, the structure, I think.
How it works, how it all fits together.
Yeah, maybe we should have a corner where we, like, think of new tournament structures, and then we can let people try them. I'm too tired to try them.
Yeah.
I want to be the idea person.
That's good. We need ideas. Before we can actually try them out. All right, well, there's some good things to think about there, then. The Kuitan and the Toby rule in tournaments. And let's hope that we can get something together for the World Championship in Reach Mahjong somewhere.
It would be cool.
Would be cool. Vegas would definitely be cool. Macau would be okay, too, but I suppose that's just as big a trip, and it's probably not as good deals for Europe to Macau, huh?
Yeah, I think they have a lot more hotels, and there's lots more flights to Hong Kong, I think.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Hong Kong, yeah. I mean, Macau, obviously, but Hong Kong, yes. Huh, all right.
Just a short ferry ride over to Macau.
All right. Let's start wrapping it up. Events coming up. Like we said last week, there is the Mahjong Combat Tournament at the Anime Collision Con Convention in Chicago. That'll be running November 18th through 20th.
And reachmahjong.com will be sponsoring prizes for that.
Yes, very good. In Japan, not quite Mahjong, but the Japan Poker Tour is off and running. There are some cool events that you can check out if you happen to be in Japan.
Yeah, this is the last week to qualify for the national APPT Championship, which takes place on Saturday and Sunday. The online satellite's already finished, so now it's just the live ones. Mm. Yep.
And since I was mentioning USPML, the United States Professional Mahjong League will have their open play session on the 13th of November. If you're around New York, go ahead and check them out. They'd like to play Japanese style Reach Mahjong. And they also, the place where they play has the coolest zip code I ever saw. It's like 10001. It's got to be like the first zip code they ever handed out in America, don't you think?
There's a group in Seattle playing as well. They play mostly in Bellevue and stuff. Yeah, I have them on my Facebook somewhere.
Cool. They're playing Reach Mahjong.
Yep, wow. They played at the mall.
At the mall?
Yeah. So I'm hoping I can drop in sometime when I'm around, because I think I used to... I didn't work at that mall, but I definitely worked very close by to that mall. I went to school right by that mall, so... My cousin lived across the street.
Wow. I guess I gotta start trying to campaign for it in my hometown, too, then. Alright, thanks again. I think... Do we have any other events or anything to...
No, you can follow us on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, us. Us. We gotta plug us.
You can follow the Reach Mahjong on Twitter, or Jen, Mahjong Jen, M-A-H-J-O-N-G-J-E-N.
Or I am Garth E, GARTHEEE, on Twitter.
Yep.
And then also through reachmahjong.com, if you would like to send us mail, tell us anything about the podcast or ask a question.
If you don't want to show the world what you're asking us on Twitter.
Yes. Or there's also the forums, too. But my address is Garth E, GARTHEEE, at reachmahjong.com.
It's not!
Oh, that's right.
I told you this last week.
I know, I'm just so used to all my addresses being
GARTHE, at reachmahjong.com, because it's more professional.
Oh, right. That's me.
You are a professional mahjong player.
And what is your address?
Jen, J-E-N-N, at reachmahjong.com. You can download this podcast on Twitter, or directly from the website.
Twitter? You can download
it. Not Twitter, iTunes. I do put links on Twitter that you can
you can use to find the podcast, which will eventually be on iTunes.
You know what? Maybe I will just put the link on Twitter, and then you can download it directly from Twitter.
Wow.
That would be cool.
That would be thinking.
Then you would be wrong.
I didn't say. I was just asking. I was surprised that you could do it directly from Twitter. Oh. I guess there is a way.
Okay, then you would be surprised.
Yes. Alrighty then. Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody, and have a great week.